Daylight Podcast. I am your host, Landon Thomas. I am joined by Shonda Vosmakani and Kendra Dunson for another episode. Man, we have a good one. We always have a good one, but this is going to be interesting. We are going to be talking about West is right now with the bunch of teams. I think I tweeted that 2 through 3, it could have changed with the games in the past couple days, but 2 through 3 was like, 4.5 games, and 3 through 13 in the West was 5.5 games. What do y'all think about that?
I love it. It makes basketball more entertaining. I think every parody. Team is still, it's parity. Everybody's still in it. You know, you've got Denver and Memphis at the top, you know, based on today, but you know, who knows, right? I mean, seeing Sacramento up there is awesome, right? Seeing what the Kings have done. I mean, it's really cool to, you know, shout out to them and, you know, watching Fox and Sabonis kind of duke it out with that team is great. Like the beam. I mean, the Pelicans, you know, who I was really high on before the year started, you know, and then, like you said, Landon, you've got everybody from that kind of 3 through down really till 13, even down to 13, anywhere from the Kings to the Blazers, right? Where any of these teams are a 2-3 game stretch, good or bad, from being in the, you know, in the playoffs and securing a top 6 seed, or being in the play-in tournament and being one game away from being out of the playoffs. So it's super tight. It's going to be really fun down the stretch to watch. And I think it's going to make for a really intriguing storyline for the NBA as well. You know, as you kind of these really marquee matchups and you can't really take anything for granted now, right? Sometimes there's games where you're like, you know what? You know, we can afford a loss on this one. You really can if you're one of those teams vying for a playoff spot, and especially seeding in the Western Conference. You've really got to be on top of your game, you know, in every single matchup going down, which just makes for great basketball.
Yeah, Kendra, what do you think about that? What do you think about the Western Conference right now?
It's great. You know, you really don't know what's a toss-up. I mean, Denver and Memphis is kind of separating themselves from the crowd there. But New Orleans, you know, they held the number one for a minute there. It was the Pelicans and the Grizzlies and then the Nuggets, and they can kind of stink a little bit and you still have a chance. The Suns, I believe they were 1-9 at some point. Now they're 7-3 and they're in the seventh seed. So it's just like the beauty of it all. Like it's just here, you know, it's up and down and it's shuffling. I literally have to refresh my page at the end of the night because it changes and you think a team is down and now you're like there's no way, but then you look and you're like actually there is a way, because the other two teams, they haven't won a game in a couple of contests and now their position is vulnerable and anyone can take that. So I love it. You know, it's not what it was when the Warriors had their run, you know, when KD was there and you just knew that the Warriors were going to win it all and they were going to be there in the end and no one can really stop them. Now it's like, you know, it's any man's game. And I love that. And the beauty of it all is that we're not even talking about the Warriors, you know? So we're talking about the Clippers and the Nuggets, teams that we haven't seen, you know, have that much postseason success. We're seeing that. And they have a chance to go all the way. And while the Warriors are still finding themselves. And so, and in the East, it's the same thing. You know, you have your top teams, they're there, it's a little harder, you know, they have more separation or whatever over there at the top. But in the Western Conference, you know, 3 through 13, you never know. So yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's very exciting to see, especially just parity in the league. I mean, every single game you watch, it's just a must-see game. Like, it's like even if you watch, let's just say the Lakers and Blazers. We just saw that recently. That was a must-see TV game. And they're the 12th and 13th team in the West. That's how tight it is. And another thing that I love is it's not big cities. If we're just talking about the West, like look at the top four, Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, and New Orleans. I mean,
that there's no LA, there's no Golden State, there's, you know, those top tier teams and top tier markets. That's really cool.
It doesn't feel like there's like a prohibitive favorite, right? Like,
yeah,
it feels like everybody can be beat.
Yeah, right? Even Everyone's Denver and Memphis. Weakness. Yeah,
even Denver and Memphis. Right. We saw we've seen both of those teams have bad losses this year. So it really is going to, it's going to make for an awesome postseason, because any team, even a, you know, a play-in team, if they get hot at the right time, they get healthy at the right time. I mean, who knows, right? We haven't seen a lot of 8-1 matchup or upsets in you know, previously in the NBA, but you know, this is one of those years where you could potentially see that happen.
And also to add to that, you know, you have the trade deadline coming up, and so some of these teams are, you know, vying for a position. You know, the Lakers already made a move. Moving Kendrick Nunn. And so it's just like, at the beginning of the season, they look lifeless, you know, but right now, you know, they're in the 12th seed. You know, you got old man LeBron James who is still in his prime, it feels like, and they have a legitimate chance to, you know, be in the play-ins or whatever. So that's what I love, you know, and even the Thunder, they're the 11th seed right now. They have the same record as the Warriors. They're right there with Utah and Minnesota. And so I just love it all. You know, each team has a different story. Some teams started off hot and now they're cold. Some teams started off cold and now they're hot. And some teams have made that progression to where they are now, and they really haven't, you know, had too much of a skid. And so I'm just enjoying it all.
Well, let's talk about the latter. When you said some teams, you know, they didn't have too much of a skin, that's the Mavericks. Because they don't go too hot and they don't go too cold. It's always like back to back. Like they play good, they play bad, they play good, they play bad. And I mean, the record shows it. And so in a few days. So that's what we're talking about next, is the defensive woes that we've seen, especially we talked about it all season, how good they were last year. We talked about it last season in the playoffs, how good they were defensively, the identity. Kendra, you wrote about it, and just the inconsistency of this defense. It's puzzling to me, but I want to ask Sean Avaz first, just what you've seen in the last few games. I mean, if you take the Clippers, they lost the Clippers 112. And they lost to the Hawks 130 that the Hawks put on them. And then the Blazers games, 140, 136. They had a great game defensively against the Heat, holding them to 90 points. That was so good to see. But then you just saw the bounce back game with the Clippers and what Norman Powell, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard did on them. I think 70 points combined. Jeez. But Sean Avaz, what's your thoughts on how the defense has been as of late and just overall this season?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's been poor. I don't know if there's any other way to put it. And even recently, I feel like it's gotten worse. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, because it's what I was alluding to when we were talking about Reggie Bullock. And it's like, when this team is hitting their shots, you see much more of a confidence and see much more of a willingness on the defensive end to, you know, to really clamp down. And I feel like this team gets so frustrated with missing open shots that they just, their effort kind of wanes when they're on the defensive end, and they don't give the same effort. And I don't know if that's a coaching thing. I don't know if that's a player mentality thing, but it's something that has to be fixed, because you're not going to hit 47% of your threes, right? You're going to have nights where you're shooting 35% from three, but if you can hold the opponent to 37% from three, well then, you know, you still got a chance to be in the game, right? You don't have to sit there and let the Hawks shoot 48, 49%, 50% from three like they did last week. It's kind of ridiculous. And the thing that's surprising to me is your two best defensive players. We've talked about this. Obviously, with Maxi Kleba out, it's unfortunate. Josh Green's been out. So you're really relying on Dorian Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock now that Dorian's back. And both of them have just seemed – engaged isn't the right word, but it doesn't seem like they're guarding their opponent with the same kind of force that they did last year, right? Bullock had great defense on Jimmy Butler against the Heat. But, you know, Landon, we were talking about this a couple of days ago, but the Hawks game, The Hawks played 9 players. 8 of them scored in double figures. Like, how do you let that happen? How do you not stop anybody on the Atlanta Hawks team? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me how this team, a team that was so good defensively that really this was their identity last year, you know, has completely fallen off from what they were. And when you come into a season where you know that you're trying to make up for an offensive player, the loss of one of your key offensive players, your defense just still holds steady, because it's not like Jalen Brunson was the greatest defender in the world. There's nothing, you know, really different in scheme from a coaching perspective that you know should change. So it doesn't make sense to me, and it's really, really frustrating. But the only way I can see that it gets better kind of down the stretch is, again, the Mavericks just have to keep staying within themselves and understand, hey, if we miss a shot, let's get a stop on the other end and let's go back and try it again. You know, they have to understand that not everything's going to fall. You've got to play with the same intensity throughout the entire game.
Kendra, what's your thoughts? I mean, they got Dorian Finney-Smith back recently, and they got Josh Green back, but you saw the inconsistency there from the past two games. What's your thoughts on the defense as of late?
It seems like a mental switch. I mean, you know, Kidd calling them out, you know, in his own way after the Hawks loss. You know, they were in that game. You know, they were in that game. It wasn't like a complete loss or out of reach for them. It's just the Hawks made more plays. They could not match the intensity in the second half. And Young and Collins, you know, just made some crucial plays down the end. And so Kidd called them out. And then, you know, the Heat, to me, doesn't always offer the same. They're more of a defensive team anyways. Their style is different from the Hawks, but they're still a good team. You know, they were one shot away from going to the finals, and they did really well. They played the Heat really well. They held Butler, Bam, and Tyler under their scoring averages. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, they can do it. And then here comes the Clippers. And to me, the Clippers are, at this point in the Luka era, I see them as their Achilles heel. Almost like, and maybe this is too soon to say, Shonavaz, I'm sorry, almost like San Francisco 49ers are to the Cowboys.
I'm still hurting, Kendra. I would not allow on this podcast.
Let me offer some first.
Give us at least a couple of weeks. Dang, Kendra. Oh,
I'm sorry. But I hope the point lands. Again, they were there, you know, and that's what it feels like. You know, they were there with the Clippers, but they just couldn't match. They didn't adjust to the adjustments that the Clippers did in the second half. You know, Kawhi just effortlessly just kind of got to his shots. He got to his spots. Finney-Smith, he wasn't enough. They double teamed. Kawhi made the right reads. You know, people cutting, he found them, and, you know, hockey assists here and there. That happens. But Shonavaz, you know, like what you were saying, like you see players or you see you defend well or you defend as best as you can, but the teams are still going to make their shots. And sometimes that can get to you. And I think, you know, seeing the body language, and to me that starts with Luka. You know, sometimes not finishing the play, not running down the court and helping your teammates. And now it's 4-on-5 out there. Sometimes you don't even see him in the camera shot because he's down there arguing with the ref. And in my mind, I'm like, you got to let that go. Just go to the next play, move along. And then also with JaVale McGee, you know, that signing not being what they thought it was going to be. I feel like everyone knew that, except for the front office, you know, signing him. Losing Maxi Kleber was it's unfortunate. Christian Wood, you know, he's out, but I know he'll be back. What are we expecting from him? You know, defensively, we need him on offense, but also what are we expecting from him? Are we asking too much of him? Can he live up to, or rather, can he meet the expectation that kid and this team desperately needs? And so is that too much pressure on him? I don't know, but I think at the end of the day, it's a mental thing. It's a commitment thing. You just got to stick together. And right now I feel like they're barely holding the line.
Can I also bring up something that I think is also frustrating? I know it is for all of us. Yeah. How in two of the five losses the Mavs have in the last five games that they've played against the game against the Clippers and then the first game against the Blazers, how do you shoot less than 60% from the free throw line as a team? Like, it just, it baffles me that and we've had so many games where we just cannot hit a free throw. And it's like, you make half of those and it's a 8-point game. It's a 6-point game. Yeah. It makes no sense to me that this team doesn't put more of an emphasis on whatever you have to do. If you have to have an entire day dedicated to just free throws, do it. I don't understand how you're missing so many free throws in crucial situations. And, you know, those are easy buckets. It's called free for a reason, right? Like, it's, you know, as dumb and as cliche as it is, I mean, those are the easiest buckets to get. And that keeps you in games. It builds your confidence. You see the ball go through the hoop. I mean, that's something that's crucial for this team. And we just can't, there's like one game a week where we just miss every free throw we take. And it's so frustrating. And I don't know what, you know, the Mavericks can do about it.
Yeah, it's troubling. I mean, even Jason Kidd said it. I mean, they do practice it. I've seen it, but it's just, I think free throws are always weird. Like, I mean, we see this team struggle with free throws, but the team is like filled with shooters, which doesn't make sense, because even Kidd said it. He said, it is a big thing when you get to the line the most in the league and you're shooting in the bottom of the league, the percentage wise, that doesn't help you win. And it really doesn't. And that's one of the things that it's just on the players. Like, we can point to Kidd on a lot of things, and it's like in coaching or timeout management or strategy, stuff like that. Identity change from defense to offense, et cetera. But free throws, it's just on the player. Like, that's something that you have to make. And like you just pointed out, Sean DeVos, it hurts you, because when you lose to these teams, just like they lost to the Clippers, what, by 14 points? And you, obviously it doesn't impact the game overall, but you miss, what, 11 free throws? I mean, it can impact momentum changes. It can impact, you know, those type of things. Or it can impact runs. Or it can impact opposing team runs. When they're making a run, hey, let's get a couple of free throws. Let's make them. All right, now let's calm down and get back and reset. But when you miss those free throws, especially two in a row, it's like, oh, man, it starts to trickle down. So that's something that is troubling to see. Okay, so let's talk about the big topic that I am excited and very intrigued. I wanted to wait until we talk about it. I have no clue what names Kendra and Sean DeVos are going to say right now, and I'm so excited to hear this. So it is Josh Green's ceiling. It could even be no ceilings. Shout out to Lil Wayne. But what's Josh Green's ceiling for? And he's a wild card. Like, sometimes when you just watch Josh Green, he's like the player that has just natural talent, and you're just trying to form him into a solid, you know, solid rotation piece in this league who can develop to even greater things. If he hacks into his potential. And that's what I want to start with you, Kendra. And I'm so excited to hear your answer for this. What is Josh Green's ceiling? Give me a player, and you can explain, but just give me your explanation on what is Josh Green's ceiling.
Okay. Now, as far as that ceiling, the player that comes to mind, and this is
ceiling.
Yes, from like I have a player.
Ceiling.
I have a player who's like ceiling.
What is Josh Green's ceiling? Ceiling.
His.
No, for go me, ahead. That's your answer. Go ahead.
And this is all defense, okay? It would be Jrue Holiday.
Oh. Okay.
In the sense of he has that instinctual, like, knack from, like, where the ball is. They both do they both have strong hands, strong, you know, base. He does a good job of deflecting in the passing lane. He can guard, you know, 1 through 3, maybe sometimes 4, you know, if the situation calls for it. He guards 4-court. It's the same thing that Jrue Holiday does. Now, it takes time to get to where Jrue Holiday is.
Yeah, we said ceiling.
But right, ceiling. Like, it would be nice. I think I truly think that is there. But as far as, like, maybe more, if I had to, like, realistic expectations on it or comparison on it, it would be Lonzo Ball. In a sense of, it's the same thing. I think Josh Green's motor is also a thing that serves him well. I think that's why he can guard full court if he needs to for a whole game. You know, again, it's the natural instinct of knowing where the ball is, timing for a steal, disrupting a play, going out transition, finishing at the rim. And just changing the course of the game. I think he has that. Now, as far as like passing and things like that, it's there. It's not to the level and vision of what Lonzo Ball is. This is strictly defense. And that, to me, that's where I feel like that's, as far as a player and his impact, that's where I see it. Offensively, you know, I would like to see him shoot more and just have more of an impact on that side. But as far as like defense, it would be nice for him to get to the level of Jrue Holiday. But in the meantime, I see Lonzo Ball as far as like a ceiling. And we all know, you know, before the injuries and things like that, I know it's been a while since we've seen Lonzo Ball, but no one can deny the defensive IQ that he has. And in Josh Green, he has that. I believe he has a high IQ when it comes to impacting the game on the defensive side of things. He has a good lateral movement. I can really go on and on. Stand in front of someone, even if he gets beat, that lateral movement, he does a good job of recovering and stand in front of his player and still making an impact on the ball. So,
okay.
Lonzo Ball, Jrue Holiday. What you got?
Wow.
What you got? Okay.
What do I got? All right.
What do you have, Santa Claus? Because I'm interested. Truly, I'm intrigued.
I will give you credit because I did not think of Jrue Holiday, and I like that. I think that's I think if you look at what he potentially could become, his ceiling, right? I think Jrue Holiday is very if he turns
is that an attic ceiling?
Huh?
Is that an attic ceiling? You got your ceiling ceiling?
Yeah, okay. That's an attic ceiling. That's like the top floor. Okay. You gotta have a black card to get to this over there. You know, only two, you know, only so many players have that. And Jrue Holiday, he's holding that card. So
I tried to think about this from the perspective of if he continues on the trajectory and puts in the work and continues to grow, like we've seen the growth the last year or so, right? Let's not forget Josh Green is a first round draft pick, right? People treat him like he's like a scrub off the street. Like, this guy was a pretty highly touted recruit out of college, was a really good defensive player at Arizona. And there was argument to be had he should have been one of the first guards off the board in the 2020 NBA draft. So it's not like, I think because of his situation that he's in, And he, you know, guys like Desmond Bane went after him, and guys like, you know, there was a
the we talk knew you gonna bring up Bane.
I have to.
You gotta fire every episode to plug in Bane.
Gotta start
an
Desmond Bane
No. Okay,
Desmond Bane fans for life coming soon.
What I'm trying to say is, Mavs fans will always hold that comparison, right, because of the career that guys like Desmond Bane, Sadiq Bey have had, and all the talk of the Mavericks could have chosen any one of them prior to Josh Green, right? So we really haven't seen Josh Green in his full potential and really with unleashed, I would say. If I had picked a comp for today, I would say his ceiling right now, what I would love to see him become is probably Mikal Bridges, I think, is what he could potentially be. What I think if he puts in the work, and I'm thinking of a guy back in the day that was a kind of a different career arc, right? Was a star for a team, but really found his niche and his role when he switched teams. I think Josh Green could be, if everything goes right, he could be an Andre Iguodala type player. I'm talking from a ball handling perspective, a defensive perspective, a guy who can knock down threes. Maybe not at a 45% clip, but potentially can make some clutch shots. He's got all the athleticism in the world. He's got the basketball IQ. You can see it in the games he plays. If he can continue on that trajectory, I see a lot of Iguodala post 76ers with him. You know, Denver Iguodala, early Golden State Iguodala, right? A guy that can, you know, should possibly be starting, but even off the bench can really bring you that athleticism, can really bring that energy and that spark to your team kind of off the bench and really become a vocal leader as he grows into that role.
Kendra, what do you think? Okay, listen to this. Kendra, what do you think about Sean Navaz's answer?
I like the Andre Iguodala. I mean, that would be great for the Mavs to have that. That's a cornerstone piece. You know, that would be a great pair with Luka for the, you know, foreseeable future, because we know Andre and what he can do. And so it's definitely there. Mikal Bridges, I can definitely see that, but I like the full picture of Andre. It's just going to take a while. You know, he just has to develop a consistent shot, a consistent jumper. You know, and that's something that Andre was able to do as his game progressed. You know, that's just part of it. And you hope that that kid gives him more minutes. He gets more time. He can stay healthy, stay on the court, and just watch what happens, because it's definitely there and putting in the work.
And I think he's earned more minutes, and you know, in some ways, him coming back and the struggles of Reggie Bullock and the injury to Maxey, kind of a blessing in disguise for young players like this, right? Because the coaching staff is forced to play you. They don't really have any other alternatives, right? You're not going to throw out, you know, JaVale McGee now just all of a sudden because Maxey went down, right? You're going to shift your lineups around and, you know, somewhat go small, right? And you'll have Wood at center, hopefully, when he's back. And right now you're rolling with Powell and Bertans, and you're shuffling through guys who can play the four. And you know, Green can play, I think he can play 1-3, and maybe sometimes a small four if you need, but I think he's better suited for that 1-3 role. But, you know, really, they're kind of being in a position where he has to play more minutes, and it's good because he's really showing out and he's really proving what a valuable piece he is to this team.
Right. And so I like that. What do you think of the Jrue Holiday comparison and Alonzo Ball comparison?
I like the Jrue Holiday. I mean, if you can get a guy like any, you know, a guy who's as good as Jrue Holiday, that's awesome. If he can turn into that, I think Jrue Holiday is probably a better ball handler than Josh Green is, and probably a better 3-point shooter, but I think that'll come with time. The Lonzo, see, I've never been high on Lonzo. So for me, that's kind of just like
defensively,
Lonzo's great. I mean, he's a good defender. He's a very, very good on-ball defender. I'll give credit where credit's due. But I've never thought his offensive game was that polished. I never thought he was a special talent. I think he went high in the draft because I've never been high on him, even during the draft process. I thought he went high because he's a UCLA kid. The Lakers had the second pick, all the hoopla from his dad, and you know, all that stuff. I just was never in on the Lonzo Ball hype train. He's a good defender. He's great. But his offensive game, I think it's tapped out, right? I think this is the version of Lonzo you're going to see, and that's it. There's no room for improvement at this point. I think Josh Green, there's a lot more room for him to grow and to learn and to really add, add pieces to his game that can make him more of a threat and more of a fit next to Luka as well.
Just say you didn't like the answer. Just say
I like part of it. I agreed with the part that I liked. I said
defensively for both players. Like, I know, you know, Green is not to the level of where Holiday is. Even, a rookie Holiday, Green is definitely going to have to work to become those things that we all see. And so that's why I think the Iguodala one is, it feels more complete rather than the Jrue Holiday one.
Okay, so I'm gonna be realistic. Since y'all thought
unrealistic now. All of a sudden,
y'all throwing out All Star Jrue Holiday. Y'all throwing out Mikal Bridges. Who's
you said ceiling,
not just ceiling.
ceiling. Why not?
Okay, he can. I say ceiling. Jrue Holiday. That boy is a man. He's a beast defensively. He should be the defensive player of the year. I mean, Marcus Smart was great, but Jrue Holiday, he should be the defensive player of the year. But I'm going to be realistic. I'm going to tell y'all who – realistic for me. I'm going to tell y'all who I think Josh Green's ceiling is. And we can do – realistic, and we can do ceiling like y'all want to do.
Oh, I had one other name in my mind, but I'll share that later. But I like my Iguodala pick.
Yeah, Iguodala is nice. Who was the All-Star as well, but I mean, that's
and a Finals MVP.
Yeah, and a Finals MVP. Okay, Sean DeVos, you throwing that much pressure. I thought Kendra was pressure on his ceiling. Josh Green. But you Lil Wayne over there got no ceilings, Finals MVP. You got an All-Star. I mean, multiple champion. Okay, but I'm going to just say Trevor Ariza.
Also multiple-time champion.
What do y'all think about that? Ariza. Here's the thing. He's great shooter. He could dribble the ball. And he was an incredible defender. And that's what I see from Josh Green. I think we're putting so much pressure on him that we're thinking every time he does something flashy, we're like, oh my gosh, this guy is untradeable. He is the future. He's so young and he's doing all these incredible things. But I think there's a cap on his ceiling. I think Trevor Ariza is a good cap to have. I mean, especially when you look at his Houston days. I mean, he averaged 12.7 points per game. He shot 48 percent from his twos. He shot 35% from his threes. And just overall, you look at his field goal percentage, 42%. But I think that's the type of player Josh Green is. I think he will have 5 years of averaging 13 points, shooting 35% from three, great defense. He can occasionally be a ball handler. And that's not a knock. I think that's a great ceiling to have for his talent. I would take that for 5 years. And then you look at his Washington years, three seasons, it was pretty much the same thing, but he shot 37% from three. He scored 12.7 points per game again, and his field goal percentage was around the same. So when you look at those type of players, I mean, when you look at that type of player, I see Josh Green fitting that mold. And obviously, Andre Iguodala, Lonzo Ball, Jrue Holiday, and Mikal Bridges, that would be incredible if Josh becomes that type of player. But I see him being more of a great, solid starter or one of the best bench pieces on a good team. And that's why I see him, Trevor Ariza, and you could even throw Danny Green in there as well with his Spurs days.
I like the Danny Green one. I think Josh Green is more athletic than Trevor Ariza, right? I think he's got more bounce to his game than Ariza did.
Yeah, the Danny Green ones, I like that one.
I was thinking, yeah, like, maybe not the shooter he I guess is, because he's still playing. But I see a little like Wes Matthews in his game too, right? Just from like a defensive and like in a just kind of the way Josh Green kind of plays, you know, plays on ball defense. He reminds me a little bit of like early Wes Matthews before, you know, obviously he's not the shooter that Wes was, but, you know, just kind of the same intensity and kind of the same scrappiness that Wes Matthews played with when he was in Portland. And, you know, eventually, you know, even post Achilles, you know, with the Mavericks for a little bit, he was still a fairly decent on-ball defender. But Portland Wes Matthews was a beast on ball. I mean, that guy was one of the toughest defenders in the league. I kind of see some flashes of that as well.
That's a good pick too. Okay, so that was our ceiling topic, and it's going to be interesting to see. I guess we just have to wait, 12 years to find out who who was right on that. But
let's see y'all in 2045.
Again, the Jrue Holiday comparison is only on defense. That's it. I'm not saying his game mirrors.
No, Jrue you don't Holiday. Have to. Yeah, you don't have to explain.
I just want to make sure.
I'm just saying the boy is a lock.
I just want to make sure the listeners know, like, what is Kendra talking about? I'm talking about defensively.
No, you said ceiling. I mean,
ceiling.
You didn't say floor. I mean,
floor.
Floor. Yeah. What is Josh Green's? All right. Yeah. What is Josh Green's floor? His rookie season.
Basically.
Oh man. Honestly, even if he just turns out to be another Dorian, that would be good too.
That's not bad.
Okay, so that concludes our podcast episode, but let's talk about tonight's game with the final words. The Mavericks play, they play the Wizards tomorrow. Okay, that concludes our episode, but for final words, let's just talk about how disappointed I am with Kristaps not playing last night. That's so upsetting. First, we had Jalen Brunson coming back to Dallas, and then last minute, he's not playing. I mean, we got wind of it that like a day before, but it was still a game time decision, and he didn't play. And then you get Kristaps coming back with the Wizards, being a focal point, and he was playing great this season, and now he's not playing. He was weak to week. We don't know when he's coming back, but it's still so upsetting not to see him last night. And I'll start with you, Sean Avaz. Just what is your thoughts? Final words. What's your thoughts on not seeing Brunson or KP on their squads in Dallas?
I think they were just scared. They were scared to show their faces and scared to get on the court because they knew it was going to happen.
That's hilarious.
No, I mean, that's the nature of the NBA, man.
Isn't it funny though? They get hurt like a day, two or day timing, days right before. Yeah.
It's real suspicious.
What perfect timing. No, it's the nature of the NBA. I mean, it's unfortunate because both guys are having great seasons. You know, and it would make, you know, obviously it would make the game, you know, Mavs games are always fun, but you know, when you get to watch a guy like Luka, but you know, having that kind of spice to it, you know, having that returning player come back, you know, we don't really get that a lot as Mavs fans. So it would kind of be cool to finally see that, but you know, there's always, you know, next year, and you know, hopefully you know, both of those guys, Brunson and Porzingis, can both play in next year, and you know, it'll, you know, we'll be there to watch it. So you know, it's unfortunate that that's the way it is, but you know, I think both players would get, you know, a lot of love. I know Brunson got a lot when he, you know, during the game he didn't play, but I know he was courtside, so or at least with the bench. So I'm sure both players would get a lot of love from the fans. I mean, they both, you know, were great here in their time in Dallas. It's just unfortunate circumstances, and you know, all the best to both of them.
Oh yeah, of course. All the best to both of them. We definitely want them healthy, no matter what.
And I'll say this: it's great to finally see. It's the Porzingis injury is unfortunate, but to see the season he's having, it's awesome. Because when he's good, like he's shown flashes of old New York Porzingis, and it's really cool to see because he was such a gifted player before the knee injury. So it's nice to see him kind of back on his feet a little bit.
It is nice, and I'm pissed that he didn't play last night. Kendra, what's your thoughts on not seeing Brunson and Porzingis play back in Dallas?
0-2 this season. That sucks.
The last two number two options.
Yep. Right. So it's just like, you know, you want to see your former player play against against their team and see how they do. You know, you want to beat them as much as you love them or appreciate them or whatever. You still want to beat them, and so that opportunity is not there. But I'm sure it'll be, you know, in the future. Unless in the future, it could be, who knows, in the finals this season. You never know. You know, it could be the Knicks and the Mavs or the Knicks and the Wizards, but I don't think that's happening. But in another world,
it ain't.
It's not happening at all.
But. Mark it down. Kendra said Knicks Mavs in the finals.
Yeah. I would also like to remind people that Shonovan did not have the Grizzlies.
That's true.
I'm not going to let that go. So
I would also like to say I did have the Pelicans as a top three seed. They're third or fourth right now? No, they're fourth right now. And our dear friend Ian had both the Lakers and the Timberwolves as top seed, as very high ranked teams. So let's not forget to give him a little.
I like how Sean Navaz just, while Kendra just went at him. He just pushed it to Ian. Like, she talking about you.
He's flipping Brunson with the pass, man. He's just like, dish it out. But
I'll own it.
Yeah, I mean, you also, I think, didn't you have the Clippers?
I did have the Clippers one, yeah.
We're going to have to run that. We're going to have to run that list back.
Yeah, y'all really need to run that preseason.
Next week, we'll run that our list back and see how
and I didn't get to do mine. I wasn't there that episode. So it really doesn't matter because now
so that's why you're going at Sean DeVos. Yeah. You didn't even have one.
I had a list.
Kings is a top four seed.
She's LeBron over here. She called it.
I knew Sean DeVos was going to say that. I really did.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
No, but I mean, as far as Porzingis, you know, I think, you know, if he would have played, I think he would have been, you know, I think he would have got love from the Mavs fans, you know. I know, you know, it started to kind of get bothersome with the injuries and him being there and not being there. And when he was there, the offense didn't really flow and things like that. But I think overall, you know, it's just, we're just going to have to wait to see that matchup, you know, because I know Luka loves to show up big in those kind of games. And so hopefully, you know, though he's not going to be there, the Mavs, again, the focus is defense. You know, you still got to play and you still got to show up big. So those are my thoughts on it.
Well, I'm just going to say this right here to wrap this up. I'm very disappointed, but if April 5th, when the Sacramento Kings come to town and Harrison Barnes is not playing, all of Luka's number two options do not like playing in Dallas against Luka. I'm so disappointed
is that
to
the
see.
Theory?
That's my theory. That's
they're all scared. That is my theory. That's what it is. They're terrified.
I was so excited to see those two games. I talked about that.
They don't
want to
go up against Luka. They don't. They're like. I'm not going. First time against him. No way.
They're probably more afraid of the fans than they are of Luka. Because
I did give props to Jalen. He did come out and sat with the bench, and the crowd gave him a good good welcome back. And it's exciting to see. But you want to see him go head to head. I wanted to see Luka versus Jalen. That first game in Dallas and them going back at it. For Luka to say, hey, this is what you're missing, man. You could be a part of this, even though they have the same record pretty much throughout the whole season. But also for Jalen to say, hey, this is what you're missing. show out. But like you said, we'll have to wait till next season. Or you never know. Maybe like Kendra said, maybe
Dallas next finals.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. But I don't think KP will get the same love that JB does.
You don't think so?
No, I think because we drafted JB and, he kind of flourished that way at KP. It's just different expectations and then not living up to those expectations. It can be, bittersweet.
You think so? Because he was injured a lot here and it just didn't work out chemistry. Him and Jalen had great chemistry and Jalen said, I'm out. You think so?
I think so.
Shauna Voss, what you think? You think they'll get the same reaction? Or do you...
I don't know if they get the same reaction. I think Porzingis would still get some love. I understand what Kendra's saying from the point of...
For sure.
The fact that he was just injured all the time, it kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But it's not like he left on bad terms. It's not like, there was a strain. By all accounts, he was a great guy and, got along with everybody. And just... the guy couldn't stay healthy, man. And it sucks because, I was a big... I've talked about this a lot. I was a big fan of that trade and I thought it was going to work out perfectly and it didn't, and it's just the way that the NBA goes. And, he seemed like he tried to do whatever he was asked, whatever he was asked of, right? Whether it was Carlisle or Kidd, he did what he was told to do and stuff just doesn't work in the NBA. So, I would still hope that Mavs fans would give him love, but definitely not the way they would give Brunson just because, especially the showing Brunson had against Utah last year in the postseason. Without him, we don't win. We don't win that series. So it's kind of, he kind of carried the team when Luka was out, and so he deserves. I feel like Mavs fans, perhaps feel like he deserves a little bit more. For really carrying this team through a tough stretch when Luka wasn't playing.
Yeah, I honestly was surprised that he got a big welcome back praise from the crowd. I thought it was going to be mixed evenly because you pointed out the positive things, but he did bounce. Like the first chance he got.
I think that was more of a, oh my God, we miss you. Like we, we took you for granted.
Yeah. And seeing the video always helps.
Yeah. The video helps for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We show the highlights of the playoffs and what he did. I mean, no one's going to boo right after a highlight video. That's smart. That's very smart. Never just show the player. You got to do a video first of the highlights.
What's Porzingis' highlight? Is it just like a couple alley oops and then him getting treatment on the rehab table? Is that how his? Oh,
no, you didn't.
No, I'm messing with it.
No, you didn't. No, they better show the bubble. That boy was a beast. Yeah, bubble.
He was awesome.
He was like Giannis in the bubble.
Before he tore his meniscus.
But. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Kendra, get your boy, man. All right.
You gotta get him off the podcast.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Shonda Wise is hitting him with too much truth right now. Sharing too many thoughts right now.
Yeah, the Cowboys last got me looking at stuff differently, man. That's what it is.
Yeah, actually, I'm on Sean Navaz's side. I can't believe you, Kendra. How you going to throw the Cowboys out like that? It just happened, man.
Still trying to recover.
I know.
The only way out is through, so we just got to get through this together.
Oh, it's we.
First is get him off the podcast, and I was like, hold my hand, and let's do this together.
I'm not going to leave you hanging. I mean, I'm hurting too, but not too much.
There you go.
Well, now I'm hurting because of the Cowboys and because of your cold words. That's why.
Man. Well, I did pick the Chiefs preseason to go all the way. And so I'm holding it.
There you go. As long as it's As long as it's not the 49ers or the Eagles, I'm fine.
There you go.
I'm fine.
Amen.
All right. Well, we'll leave it on that note. Thanks for tuning in, as always. I love talking Mavs with Kendra and Sean Avaz and Ian. And just it's just great to talk shop every week because it doesn't feel like a podcast. It just feels like just talking basketball. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for all the support. Goodbye, everyone. We'll be right back.